Welcome to TSX Media's Moments in Mining. I'm your host, Galen Engen. I'm speaking today with mining investment icon Rick Rule, President and CEO of Sprott US Holdings. Welcome, Rick. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you here.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you for the ability to address your audience.
Oh, thank you. Now, 2019 has already been a year of notable mining mergers, more specifically the Barrick Gold merger that happened in January, where they wrapped up an $18 billion mega merger with Randgold Resources, essentially creating the world's largest miner. Now, this was followed by Newmont Mining's $10 billion acquisition of Goldcorp, which for Goldcorp shareholders represented a 17% premium on their 20-day volume-weighted average. Now, if we're going to talk about premiums, let's talk about the Australian miner St. Barbara acquiring Atlantic Gold for its Moose River Consolidated Project in Nova Scotia in an all-cash offer and spin-out share transaction worth $2.95 per share of AGB. Now, that's a 40.8% premium over the volume-weighted average. That's a pretty good premium. Now, I know that you are a key shareholder in Atlantic Gold, and I was wondering what, in your mind, was the reason behind St. Barbara finding Moose River to be so attractive?
Well, I think that Stephen Dean and his team over 7 years, really de-risked Moose River. The Australians didn't come across here thinking they had to fix something. They bought an asset that had a processing plant that was running perfectly. The labor relations and community relations were excellent, not broken. The reserve picture was good, the resource picture was good, and importantly, the investment thesis that Stephen Dean and his team had developed over time, which was that there was a series of deposits that could be consolidated on a hub and spoke basis, that this was in fact a camp of small but high grade and economic deposits, proved to be true. So St. Barbara was able to come over here and come to Canada, and move into a new theater, but move into a theater in a way that had been de-risked for them by Stephen Dean and his team.
Gotcha. Now, speaking of Australia's gold miners, they seem to be trading at a premium compared now to the Canadian counterparts. Do you think there is a reason for this disparity?
I do. My Canadian friends won't like the way I say this, but I think that the Australian mining companies have been better run for the last 10 years. Australia is more isolated and hence more ethnocentric, really. And the Australians believed that the value creation proposition ran from rocks to money, that you were supposed to make money, make a cash yield in mining. In Canada, probably with a lot of help from my country, we came to believe in a value creation triangle, rocks to stocks, and stocks to money.
Gotcha.
And so we incorporated other themes, optionality, and things like that, whereas the Australians were much more directly economic driven. Now, the Australians had a bit of a head start against the Canadians, ironically, in that the Australian dollar depreciated more rapidly against the U.S. dollar. The Australians produced commodities sold in U.S. dollars, and they paid for them in Australian dollars, which depreciated. The consequence of those two things is that while we in North America and our friends in Europe are still mired, one could argue, in an extractive industry bear market, in Australia, they're in the midst of a full-on bull market as a consequence of corporate performance. Something I hope which is contagious.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of corporate action, with both Barrick and Newmont expected to sell off assets, non-core assets, what do you think that's going to do to the appetite for M&A in Canada?
You know, the whole topic of M&A is a wonderful topic, and I'll get around to answering your question, I promise. But first, I'm going to editorialize. This M&A is good, and then it is also good. You merge two companies, and the resultant company is larger and more liquid. The liquidity gives it a higher relative share price than it otherwise would have had, making shareholders happy, while lowering the cost of capital in a capital-intensive business. That's a good.
Okay.
The second thing that happens in an intelligently constructed merger is that you get greater assets under management relative to general and administrative expense. The industry has suffered for 30 years from excessive general and administrative expense relative to things like revenue, EBIT, and assets under management. The third thing that happens is that the opportunity set almost always improves. Managers make asset allocation decisions against a broader range of assets, and so they have more ability to competitively deploy capital across the assets. And the fourth thing is the thing that you're talking about, which will be the greatest thing for the TSXV, which is the fact that one of the byproducts of these mergers is that both properties and people become redundant to the combined company. And the juniors, the place that the TSXV absolutely excels, have the ability to pick up properties which, while they were not strategic to Barrick, turn out to be absolutely tremendous opportunities to these juniors. I look back to the last cycle, and I'm thinking of a few notable successes that we participated in that were part of this theme. Pan American Silver was built by acquiring cast-offs from bigger companies. The stock in the process of this amalgamation period went from 50 cents to above $40. Silver Standard was built in the same fashion. Bob Quartermain, when he was growing the company, took it from 72 cents to over $40. The best example I know is, of course, Ross Beaty's Lumina Copper, which went from 50 cents to, if my memory serves me well, finally, $160 out of six dispositions. So this theme of taking assets that aren't substantial enough or well enough known to be strategic to big companies, but putting them in the hands of people who can focus on them and exploit them is important. The second theme is that there are people who aren't utilized to their full potential in these mergers. And they become available with 20 or 30 years of paid for education.
Right.
To the juniors. The takeover of Placer Dome 10, 15 years ago yielded to us Andy Jackson and Dr. Neil Adshead. I mean, that merger made an almost immeasurable difference to Sprott in terms of our ability to acquire intellectual capital and use that intellectual capital more efficiently than Placer Dome had been able to use it. So I think this merger and acquisition theme is a very underappreciated cause for market strength in the next 2 years.
You got it. Now, speaking of market strengthening, that Bitcoin is seeing some upward movement again. Now, I know you got in early and ended up selling at around $2,000 before the valuation run that, you know, saw prices go up to 20K or almost 20K. But we're looking at Bitcoin right now, and it's already up 40% this month. Do you think we're in for another bull run? And if not, when? And do you own any cryptocurrency now?
In terms of the Bitcoin, you were a bit too generous as to my selling price.
Oh, geez, am I?
You were right that I was in early, but I was out earlier, sadly.
Okay, all right.
Than you suspect. You don't apologize for any trade that you made money on. I didn't make as much as you suggest. The reason that I sold is because I really didn't understand the nature of the value proposition. I bought it because I was interested in the market action, and I was rewarded too quickly, frankly, so I sold it. It seems to me that the primary value proposition of the cryptocurrencies has been the fact that they are supposed to be frictionless.
Okay.
Except for that they don't end up being as frictionless as one would hope.
Exactly.
And in terms of utility, it is anonymity. Increasingly, governments are getting in the way of the promise of anonymity. So I'm I'm leery about the value proposition offered up by cryptocurrencies. Listen, I hope they work. As an individual, I'm a consumer of currencies. I want the Canadian dollar to compete with the US dollar, and I want that to compete with the euro, and I want that to compete with yen, and I want all of them to compete with gold, and I want all of them to compete with cryptos, so that each can compete with the other to offer utility to me.
That makes sense.
You know, at Sprott, we are very involved, not in the crypto world, but rather in the distributed ledger, making investments in technologies that will allow for the ownership, the transfer, and the authentication of precious metals and commodities via the distributed ledger. So I'm very, very bullish on blockchain and distributed ledger technologies.
That leads right into the next question, which is essentially, do you think that blockchain has a place in gold mining? But you supply chain control, auditing, all that kind of lovely stuff that goes on with the blockchain format itself. This is all things that will lend to the business and streamline it, correct?
This isn't something that's happening in the future. This is happening right now. We have a technology, vault chain, in a venture called Tradewinds, between ourselves and IEX, an electronic exchange operator, including wheat and precious metals, Newmont, Agnico Eagle, and we have a distributed ledger gold product up and running now. The physical gold is stored at the Royal Canadian Mint. Our authentication signature is accepted by the Royal Canadian Mint as proof of ownership. You can ask for delivery of this product. Newmont sold 3,000 ounces on the platform. This exists right now. What is changing, my suspicion, is that within 18 months to 2 years, this vault chain product will have been tokenized. And when that happens, you will be able to use gold that you own and can take physical possession of as a medium of exchange. You will be able to borrow against it. You will be able to spend it on a credit card. In other words, for the first time in a very, very long time, gold will be money, but it will be money in a frictionless fashion. This isn't something that's going to happen in the distant future. This is something that's going to happen in the immediate future, because the foundation is already in place. Mm-hmm. Transactions are already taking place.
Okay. Well, in knowing that, then, can we expect there to be coverage or discussion of blockchain and its ability to help out the mining industry at the Sprott Symposium coming up in July?
I guarantee very few things as a licensed salesman, mm-hmm. and I guarantee you that.
That's awesome.
We're extremely, extremely excited about this. It's a product that's so simple that I, as a 66-year-old, can do it. And if I can do it, believe me, it's efficacious for every person on the planet. The ability that investors will have to access gold without the friction inherent in the physical gold market, I think will greatly democratize gold ownership. And I think that making gold a currency again, a medium of exchange that's simultaneously a store of value, has the potential over time to make sovereign governments, governments in places like the United States and Canada, be more fiscally responsible. The fiat currency offered up by the United States and Canada at present for its citizens doesn't have any viable competitor. And the idea that over time you can debase your currency is an idea that's without risk to sovereign governments. But if individuals had the ability to own a medium of exchange that they could buy groceries and pay their rent in, that was simultaneously a store of value, yep. that didn't depreciate and was effectively frictionless on exchange,
right.
like fiat currencies, mm-hmm. I think is probably the only way that we know to make our governments responsible to their citizenry.
That makes sense. Now, just a quick word. Is there any parting words that you have for gold bugs out there? What can they expect this year? What are they going to be looking for? Who are they going to be watching out for?
You know, gold bugs that measure their wealth in almost any currency in the world, with the exception of the U.S. dollar, are happy. I'll say that first of all. I think, and I'm speaking as an American now, I think there are many things that determine the price of gold, but the most important in the last 40 years has been that gold measures global investor confidence in the U.S. dollar, as measured by the U.S. 10-year Treasury. And there are a couple reasons why I think gold investors should take heart. The first is that gold has, for the last 2 years, done really reasonably well, even while the U.S. dollar is strong. It has risen simultaneously with the U.S. dollar. The last time it did that was 2000 and 2001, which began a tremendous romp for the gold price. The U.S. dollar and the U.S. 10-year Treasury has been in a 35-year bull market, mm-hmm. with yield falling from 15.6 to what, 2.4?
Something like that.
A 35-year bull market is, by my reckoning, one that's very long of tooth. And if you buy the argument that gold trades contra to the U.S. 10-year Treasury, the fact that the U.S. 10-year Treasury market is either over or almost over suggests that the recovery in gold has just begun. And if you're looking for quantitative confirmation of that, I would point to two factors. The first is, in 1981, at the low point in the U.S. 10-year Treasury, when the yield was at 15.6, about 8% of investable assets in the United States were in precious metals and precious metals securities.
Right.
The similar figure today is between 0.33% and 0.5%. While the 10-year mean is about 1.5% to 2%. If gold, I'm not suggesting that gold wins the war against U.S. dollar and moves itself back to an 8% market share of investable assets in the United States. What I'm suggesting to your listeners is that gold is restored to its three-decade mean, which suggests that the appetite, the market for precious metals and precious metal securities, would rise fourfold in the largest investment market in the world, which I think could be pretty dramatic. And the reason for that is the fact that I think investors around the world and in the United States are confusing liquidity in the United States, the fact that there's lots of cash in the system, mm-hmm. for solvency,
gotcha.
Which is our ability to service our debt. And that is problematic. We have $22 trillion, trillion, that's 12 zeros, in on-balance sheet liabilities at the federal level, never mind state and local level. And we have over $100 trillion net present value of off-balance sheet obligations. To service this debt, we have federal income, that is expenditures net of receipts, of a minus $1.5 trillion. Now, investors will have to ask themselves how you add a column of negative numbers, that is annual deficits, and arrive at a positive sum necessary to service that debt.
Right.
I would suspect that that's arithmetically impossible. And when the strong American narrative runs into the negative arithmetic of the federal budget, my suspicion is that the U.S. 10-year Treasury, the obligation of this debtor that can't service its debt, will be negatively impacted relative to gold.
Gotcha. Wow. That'll be interesting times coming up. Now, are there any juniors that we should be keeping our eye on over the next little while? Who's keeping you excited?
I need to say that given my regulatory status in the United States and Canada, I have to politely defer that question.
Good point.
I can tell you the classes of companies that I'm devoting my own money to.
Please.
I am playing the merger and acquisition business aggressively from two viewpoints. One, trying to buy companies that I think are strategic in either horizontal or lateral mergers, that is companies that have attributes that will make them attractive to others so that I can enjoy the takeover premiums that we enjoyed in the Atlantic Gold takeover. But the second thing I'm doing is looking for vehicles that are run by serially successful teams around juniors who will be able to buy the cast-offs from these mergers and build the Pan Americans and the Silver Standards and the Luminous of the future. The second theme that I'm attracted to are the royalty and streaming companies. This is a more controversial pick because other analysts suggest that the streaming companies are overvalued relative to the rest of the mining market. I disagree. While they do sell at a higher EBIT to enterprise value ratio, the royalty and streaming companies have effectively no sustaining capital investment requirements, and they're generating 65% operating margins, roughly four times the operating margins of the regular mining industry.
Okay.
And finally, we believe that streaming will become an increasingly important part of the capital deck in both mine construction and in merger and acquisition.
Okay.
The market for non-investment grade debt finance in the mining business was really disrupted by the Basel III banking accords.
Okay.
And we see a demand for non-investment grade capital in the mining business over the next 5 years being between $10 and $25 billion a year. And we see streaming capturing an important part of that. So while many analysts suggest that the growth period for the streamers is over, we suggest that the growth period for the streamers will continue to be very strong for the next 5 years. And then finally, I'm allocating money to generative exploration. The mining industry has, by its own admission, underinvested and misinvested in exploration for 15 years. And the consequence of that is that the development pipelines of the mining industry are dangerously thin. Every major mining company in the world is increasing its exploration budget and increasing their exploration budget dramatically. The consequence of that is that the juniors who are involved in what we call the prospect generation business, people who rather than explore for their own account, sole risk, generate exploration ideas, which they then turn to majors in return for a carried interest.
Right.
I think are going to enjoy an unbelievably good 5 years. And the consequence of that is, although I'm very lonely in the exploration business, I seem to be the only one right
now. Anyone out there?
I seem to be the only one who cares. The truth is, in my past, when I was alone and right, it's happened a few times, I enjoyed tremendous rewards. And I am looking forwards to repeating that lonely but rich theme over the next decade.
Perfect. Rick, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. This is enlightening in every respect. I'm hoping that I can speak to you again soon and discuss more about gold and minerals and mining. That would be lovely.
These are all my favorite topics, and your audience is my favorite audience. So I look forward to having the ability to visit with you again at your leisure.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Rick.
Take
care. You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That concludes another episode of TSX Media's Moments in Mining. See you next time.